Hello, welcome into episode 139 of Caton's Craft Collective. I'm Louise and today I've got a blather with colour, what's a crack, swap section, coming up, tartantastic, kids o'clock section, be me, and the shopee section. I sponsor this for my own crafty business, which is www.etsy.com/shop/Caton's Craft. All links are with the show notes, so get your cup of tea or your dram. I'll let you know what a crack is in Caithness this week.
Now for the blather.
The blather. Colour. Last episode I was splaffing on about Amanda B. Collins' hat Bailey, saying that it had been knitted up in a purple colour as well as an autumnal colour, which had made me think out of the colouring inbox. I was then wondering if patterns should be photographed in black and white so that we don't get prejudiced by what the colour is knitted up. For instance, I'm drawn to purples, blues, reds, browns rather than greens and golds. And this is mainly because I know that I would wear the aforementioned and the golds really don't suit me. You would all get a laugh at how awful it makes me look. Then I wondered, well, what if it was in black and white? How would that work for the world of crafting? Do I mean turning off the colour altogether? Well, yes, let's start there. For a start, that would put the dyers out of a job, so maybe that's not a good idea. But let's just hold this theory idea for a couple of seconds. There, it's not real. Just a few minutes to think about it. Nothing can be dyed. It has to be either black or white. No in between. We can come into the many shades in between later. So how will this work? When choosing a project, we, or I, would be less bothered about what the colour is in the photo. I can't do much about the person modelling it because they do put us off too. That might be a bit more of a man thing. Show a man a pattern picture and if it's a model they dislike, there would be no getting them to wear that jumper no matter how nice it was. Show a man a photo of a jumper on a mannequin, you might have a bit more luck. And if you're really lucky, find the photo of the model doing the thing that the man likes doing, such as mountain biking, playing chess, knitting, whatever. Maybe this blather should be more about what our prejudices are than the colour itself. Colour is obviously a huge subject, so that's why I'm starting talking about it by taking it out of the equation. So if it was knit in one colour, would the pattern shine through with the lovely knitted stitches? You'd see the texture more. And I think you would get away with it for knitting actually. You mean, you could easily mix up the black and the white on stripes or houndstooth pattern or fair elf, for instance. It might not be too bad for us colour junkies. If an item was all in white, it's going to get dirty quicker, and you've got less chance of hiding any mistakes that you've made. If it was all in black, you could hide the mistakes and the dirt, but you would have to knit it in the daylight to save not going absolutely cross-eyed mad in it. I was chatting to Daisy's teacher, and she was saying about her visit to Denmark's Architectural Museum, where they had a course on Lego architecture for the bairns and they went into. She said that all schools in Denmark were given a big box of white Lego for the children to use and learn from. This takes away gender classification, which Lego can be quite guilty of, it has to be said. I've only recently been able to buy the classic set of Lego bricks locally, rather than the kits, which are heavily swathed in either pink for girls or blue for boys. Both my bairns love Lego, like I and my brother did when we were little, and back then we just had bricks and it didn't matter. So it's sad to see how Lego have gone backwards in this attitude for Lego friends being all pink and girly or blue and you can only like this if you are a boy, because that's what they sort of put the kits in. If you have only black and white to contend with, then your wardrobe will always match. We would only need a few pairs of shoes and not have to trail around the shops looking for that correct colour of purple court shoes. If you remember, I bought mine in March and I've still not worn them. They say, and I don't know who they are, but it's a common thought that dogs don't see in colour. We could ask them what they think about it, as they'd seem to get on alright without four t-shirts the same style but in different colours. They don't care what colour their dog jacket is as long as it's warm and they can have a little chew of it on the sly. Unless you're my dogs and then they don't wear clothes much to Daisy's disgruntlement. Now remember, I own the black dog, Cotro. Not the black dog of despair, the one that you hear snoring mostly, which is apparently cathartic, so I leave it in. Anyway, he is a pure black, where he's not grey, because he's getting on a bit around the muddle. I use him to hold against a dark navy or brown things, just to check if it is indeed black. It's quite handy, and I recommend everyone gets a small black dog. Whilst he doesn't have in colour, he makes for it in wiseness and love. And he matches everything in the wardrobe. It's quite a thing to think about then. Just black and white. No in between. It is or it isn't. Right, shall we move into the shades? If you're a Terry Pratchett fan, then maybe this isn't such a good idea. Unless you're going to live in the same house as Corporal Carrot, because he'll keep us all safe. However, we now run into a bit of a shade issue here. White sheep are not actually white at all. They're mostly cream or champagne. Look at them against the snow next time you see it's snowing and there are sheep there. Or take my word for it. They're a kind of champagne colour, and for those of us who like a bottle of bubbles, that's no bad thing. It's not as stark as the old bleached white. It's kinder to look at, and it really knits and crochets up absolutely beautifully. I'm going to miss on the shades of grey here and move to shades of natural colours over fibre, giving friends, as they are all colours and shades. On a Jacob alone, there's three at least, cream, brown and greys. Then you get alpaca cacas, who have beautiful rich colour coats. Our friend of the show, Dorito of Twinset Designs fame, is the most beautiful cream. His herds have browns, gold, blacks, more creams. And I have, I'm very fortunate to say, a bag of Doritos fibre upstairs waiting to be spun. Whilst tootling around on Twitter the other day, Louise Scully had been reading my mind, mentioned the same subject of what patterns are good to knit with just natural shades. Susan Crawford suggested her Diamonds Are Forever jumper. Well, you wouldn't be able to just read that out either, would you? And it's a Fair Isle yoked sweater, and of course it's very topical just now because the new Bond film Spectre came out this week. And the Thurso Cinema has reopened. Somebody has bought it over because unfortunately it had been put into receivership. So hooray for Thurso Cinema opening. We might get to see Bond in Thurso. I have been fortunate to see a whole room's worth of naturally coloured projects when attending a Spinners, Weavers and Dyers Open Day exhibit. I was absolutely fabulous to see what can be made without adding any dye at all. Oh, you dyers, please don't start crying. You are coming back soon. There is a softness about natural colours. They don't shout at you when you're walking towards them. They're pleasing to the eye, as was the beast that grew them for you to wear. They will also have the resilience of the natural product being the best thing for the beast. It's going to be wonderful for you in the right environment and use. A lovely natural colour jumper is often neutral and then can be paired up with lots of outfits, and your wardrobe quite likes that. As long as I have a long sleeve top underneath my owl's jumper, I can wear it with anything on the bottom half. Jeans, skirt, whatever colour. We would get used to it too. However, dyers, come on. Come back for your wee tea break. Oh yes, unleash the paint palette. Get out the umber, the ochre, the emeralds, the bronze, the rubies, and I'm talking colour it up, baby. Paint your palette blue and grey. Paint the town red. Well, the whole town. Yes, the whole town. Colour, I have to say, I love colour. The greens of the grass outside, the red berries on the honeysuckle just now that's managed to hold on for quite a while this year. The red of the robin's breast as he sings to me when I take wood in from the woodpile. Even the orange and gold of Buchel as he likes sunbathing just now. Like smells, we associate things with colour. We learn at an early age that red means danger and green means go. If it is indeed safe to do so, is the caveat. Although we can be curtailed into ways of thinking about colour. Give a preschooler a set of crayons, some paper and ask them to draw a tree. And you get trees of all colours and shapes from their little pudgy hands and curly tops. And by the time they have started school, it's only slightly neater, but the majority of the trees are now green. We get trained in colour theory. We are trained that lime goes with cerise, and blue matches yellow, and red and green shall never be seen except on an Irish queen. All was right on with the colour world until last year and that dress. Can you remember that dress that started out from a question from one friend to another from the Western Isles on Tumblr asking, what colour is this dress? Black and blue or white and gold? It came out that 57% saw it as blue and black, 30% saw it as gold and white, and the rest were blue and brown. This opened a whole can of worms, made a major profit for the dress designer Roman Originals, and threw our theory into the air with Buchel chasing it until it gave up. It means that different people see colours differently. Richard and I, perfect examples. I'm a blue and black dress person, and he was an adamant white and gold. This poses for some questions for me when he's wearing plugs, it has to be said, but so far nothing has blown a fuse. I was told by my art teacher that I had a good eye for colour when I never thought of it before. Don't know where it came from, but I would agree with them. Yeah, no, look at the size of my head. I have problems with buying flattering clothes, it has to be said, so don't think I'm getting overly arrogant about it. I have my faults. I have also got my good points too, and an eye for colour was one of them, until the dress. I know, I now wonder if my carefully colour-constructed wardrobe is not pleasing to everyone now. I wonder if I've looked at those gold and white people and thought, okay, so red and green, lash on, Irish Queen. And now they might be okay with rocking about in their red and green, drinking their Guinness and lashing out a jig, watching Father Ted and all other stereotypes that hopefully isn't too insulting. Blaster podcasters, what do you think? Some of this eye for colour came from teaching, some from gardening as nothing goes together like Mother Nature, birds of a feather, and some came from doing oodles and oodles of cross-stitch kits where someone else has already put the colours together. And I remember the needle case that I made in limes, cerise and turquoise thinking, who in the right mind put this together? Until I made it and then went, oh, that's nice. And it still catches my eye when I use it on occasion. If you're setting together colours for a project, you are supposed to think about their tones as well. And if you have some that are too similar, it will lose their richness for the pattern. You're supposed to put them all together and take a black and white photo or look at them through a red lens and fiddle with what goes where and where it will go in the pattern. But you know what? If you're black and white, natural shades, red and green, Irish Queen, if it makes your heart sing like that little robin on his red breast does, then you go get your gold and white dress on and wear it well, Maggie May. If you need a pee stop, go, because it's time for this Sandy and Daisy giggle.
Hello,
section. Oh, did you hear the end of Sense and Sensibility? Oh, finally. That was good. A Sandy hello to new to me, being with me a while now, and being with me forever, listeners. I very much appreciate you tuning in and using your broadband to download me, so I hope you're enjoying yourself. A Sandy hello to new group members, Granola Girl, Nitwit One, Joy of Chicks, and Betsy Sanholtz, who bought a MacLeod bag. So thank you very much, Betsy. Random hello to Jamie and Steve, who continue to be in my thoughts and prayers. And I got a message from Steve the other day, and he's been really the most wonderful, supportive husband. And you know, I'm so pleased that he's got people around him that are supportive as well. They sadly had power off in their house, and they lost the entire freezer fill, and all the meat was spoiled. And the farmer who had given them the meat, he hadn't told them. And then the farmer was there when the dumpster guy was emptying it, and he thought, I know that smell. So he came over and he guessed that they had lost the meat and they weren't going to say anything, and he has replaced it. So how kind is that? I wish I was that kind. So my heart is still with you, Jamie, and you keep fighting the good fight. And Steve, thank you for all the updates. And my love goes to you too. So also hello to Louise Loves Yarn, Swansky, Margie from Kennebunk, LP Star, who has her husband modelling a hat with hair curlers on it, made me laugh quite considerably. You got to love our other halves who model comedy outfits. Also to That Denise Girl again. Also to Louise Tilbrook, who it says ravelers with similar taste in patterns. Louise, you and I have got 9 patterns in common. Ha! Cool. That's quite cool.
What's the crack, Citrin?
What's a crack? If you're fans of the Outlander programme and you're missing all the kilts whilst the next series is being filmed, then head over to listen to Subway Knits podcast where Maria is having a droughtlander. Read along and knit along. She has started it and this is going to run until series 2 of 2016 and the prizes, one of them is going to be my Fraser Tartan project bag. So go listen to Subway Knits podcast. The 6-bit digital magazine has had its first issue published and wow, the pictures in it are unbelievable. Good read, some lovely articles in there and the patterns are very male inspired and if you like male inspired patterns then do go here. Congratulations to my Richard and his team of the four Muppeteers who competed in the 24-hour mountain bike race at Annaghiger Ski, a mountain bike area near Fort William on Saturday. They had a whale of a time and they look forward to the next 24-hour event which is the Strathpuffer in January. Thurso Library has reopened its Swanson Lane site. They had shut a few years ago due to some repairs needed on the roof and then of course they found the older building had a whole pile of things needing attended to. So, £1 million, 2 years and two other locations later, they have opened bigger and better than before. Absolutely beautiful inside. The kids' section's wonderful and they've got lots of new lovely jubbly books. Two of which are the Game of Thrones book and there I found Knit the Brunes by Jackie Holt and Ruth Bailey. I did think about you, Louise Scully. I know you'll have this book. This is a pattern book for knitting wee toys of the Brunes of the Sunday Post fame. And in it, you have got the twins. Well, you've got all the characters of the Brunes. You've got Hen, Grandpa Brune, Daphne, Ma Pa, Maggie, Joe, the twins, Horace and the bairn. And my bairnies were having a lovely time looking at this. So I don't know if they've actually read an awful lot of the Brunes. They've read Oor Willie, but I'll have to introduce them to the Brunes because it was something I always got on Sunday, was the Sunday Post to have a wee look at. And it was started in 1936 and basically they've been is stuck wearing the same clothes ever since. The poor bairn, she's been a bairn since 1936. But it's a very Scottish, well-loved, thought of cartoon. And the close-ups of the photographs of the finished product are just wonderful. They do have quite a weighty list of colours of yarn that you need. But it does say that if you want to substitute for colours that you already have, just make sure that if you do a little tension square first and make sure that it's the right size. But the detail, they've got thumbs on the wee teddies, hands, they've got moustaches, Pa's got a tie and he's got a waistcoat that's got buttons on it, and the bairn, she's got a tiny little dolly knitted just like her. Daphne's got a handbag. Horace has got glasses. The twins are quite Urwilly looking, so you could do one and just change the colour for being Urwilly. Ma has her apron on with her tweed skirt, and that was one thing I looked up to see what colour the tweed skirt was, and it is in Davy Bliss Rialto teal colour. It's brilliant. The sizes of the needles are quite small and I expect this to be incredibly fiddly because the patterns, they are quite detailed and they're quite a few pages. But the book itself, it is, the book's 9x7, so, and it's got 96 pages in it. They do say at the back, if you have, they've got a few hints and tips. Just saying the wool and the patterns used, however, we work in fairly small scale. You may choose to replace any suggested yarns with oldment you have. Check your yarn is of similar weight. And then it's got a couple of tips about joining seams, pressing of knitted pieces, stuffing heads and limbs. And then it's got a picture of Joe with his accordion. They've even knitted an accordion. It's just wonderful. There are no how to knit instructions. There's a glossary. But I think that it doesn't really need it. It would probably take it away from it if it was you need to learn to knit. This is just a purely pattern book. And I think you probably have to be quite a novice to make these, because whilst they're not doing many different techniques, it's fiddly and you need to work DPNs. This is £9.99, and you can actually buy this in Tesco's because I saw it the other day, and it's published by DC Thompson & Co. And if you go www.thebruins.com, you could get it from there. I love the back as well. It's got Ma sitting, knitting one herself, knitting herself a little dolly of herself. That must have been absolutely done on pins. Tiny little thin pins. It's absolutely, it's brilliant. It made me laugh. And it, most of them, I would say the majority of them, have the essence of what I think of the Bruins. And we know them very well, you know, and you've all got your ideas of what exactly a knitted Bruin should look like, and I think they're fantastic. Maggie's got fancy hair and a fancy dress and nice sandals. Just really lovely. It's a lovely book if you're any fan of the Bruins. And Daisy said, which one are you going to make? And I says, none of them, looks far too complicated. But don't let that put you off. A toy is not a hard thing to do if you've got a bit of experience under your belt of knitting and you aren't on any one piece for very long because you're knitting quite small bits. And if you sort of say, well, tonight I'm just going to knit an arm, or tonight I'm just going to knit a head, you'll soon get through them. So that is Knit Your Own Bruins by Jackie Holt and Ruth Bailey. And they were the authors of Knit Your Own Scotland. So I just really like their stuff. Competition. Designer of In My Pocket. She's going to hate me for that. Owlprint Panda, Amanda B. Collins, has published a lovely four pattern ebook collection called As Autumn Falls. There's a Worsted Weight cardigan, some really bony lace on the front, and there's a shawl and two hats, and there's very autumnal colours, but like I said before, if you replace them, they look fantastic with different colours. And the winner of a competition was Thistle Ridge Farm. So congratulations to you, and commiserations to the rest of you who entered. There were some really lovely comments for Amanda's work in the thread on Ravelry. So do go to look on Amanda's Etsy and Ravelry shops.
The swap section.
Swap. Remember swaps? Well, I was lamenting that I don't get any good post recently. All it is bills. I got bills. I got to pay. I don't get any other decent post any day. I wish I could make a pair of socks. So we've not had one in a long time. Do you fancy doing a Christmas swap again? So if you do, can I have sign-ups by the 13th of November, and it's to be posted by the 1st of December? The criteria would be of a homemade or very nicely made tree decoration. And I thought this year we could have a theme. So it would be a Christmas tree or Christmas tree theme. And it could, say, be a wee knitted or crocheted tree, or made from bits of tree like a pine cone, or wee tiny branches made into a little wreath. It doesn't have to be a real tree for this. You could use a fake one, or something with the smell of pine. I could go up at the end of my sentences again. I will open a thread in Ravelry and be prepared to post all over the world unless you state otherwise. Also in your package should contain a Christmas card and two wee crafty gifts. They could be anything from a pack of stitch markers from Owlprint Panda, or some yarn, or if you were really generous, a spinning wheel, I don't know. Just anything crafty, but it has to be two items. And if you wanted to take part that don't celebrate Christmas, because I know there's a few of you, then do put your name down and say you don't celebrate Christmas, but you would like to do a winter swap, because this could easily be a winter ornament as well. Although I don't know how you would do that with a Christmas tree. Well, you could still have. Well, I was just wondering how you would do that if you don't use a Christmas tree, because I think that's quite a I don't know if it's a Christian-based thing, but you could always just have a pine cone spray gold. That would be nice just to hang from your tree or from somewhere in your house, wouldn't it? I would like that. Or a snowflake, because it's got nothing to do with Christmas trees. Or a small wreath. Anyway, you could have to use your imagination for that. So, I'll put that out on Ravelry. And then we can all have a nice post.
It's time for Kids O'Clock! Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling!
Kids O'Clock. The October holidays happened. I think some schools are actually still having their half-term break. And I'm way behind in listening to other podcasts. And I'm late in recording this one. I was saying to the bairns how I was going to record the podcast. And I wanted them to record a couple of segments, names for me. And they both asked, oh, could we talk? And I went, oh, okay then. And Sandy went off with a bit of paper and came back with a list of things that kids can do to keep them entertained. What's that, the Knitmore say? Multi-generational? Albeit Mum's not in this episode. Who is really well, Mum fans, losing a bit of weight now, looking really good. She's knitting, so I'll hopefully grab her this week and talk to you for the next episode because you've not heard from her in a while. So this one is Sandy telling you how to draw the Titanic. You could, of course, draw any ship, but he happens to be quite interested in the Titanic. I kind of find it bittersweet knowing how many died, but he is small and things like that just doesn't comprehend. So for this, you will need to get yourself a bit of paper, a pencil and a ruler. So get them ready, and here's Sandy.
Today I'm going to tell you how to draw a Titanic picture. It's kind of simple and kind of easy, because all you need first is a pencil and a bit of paper and a ruler. And maybe possibly a rubber. So first you get the ruler and you draw the hull, which is the main part, where you draw a line, then a curved part at the front, and then another line, and then you go curve it down till you're almost at the bottom, you turn it in, and then you curve it back out again, and so it's a little curved part, and then it's attached to the bottom. So then you go on to the part where all the rooms are, and you use the ruler again, but only this time just do it about 5 or 6 centimeters. Then draw a little curved in, and then draw it out again, and then you do another one higher up, and then you stop and you draw another line with the ruler, not as big as the ship though, but because you're gonna have to do the mast, and yeah, just the mast. And then you do the same on the side, that curved line in that, then you just do the same in that again. And once you've done that, you do the funnels. You do 4 funnels, 4 rectangles, that's easy, on the ship, with little lines, like ropes coming off on it, attached to the top of the part where all the rooms are, to the funnel. And then, not on the first one, if you're drawing it 1, 2, 3, 4 from the back, don't draw smoke on that one if you're doing that. Not in order, but just don't do it. It only had 3 working funnels because the other 4th one was for cosmetic value.
Cosmetic
value. Then you go, once you've done that, you'll still have a lot of space at the front. Then you draw a big, massive rectangle about the size as the part where all the rooms are. And you draw a little line. It can be curved, straight, whatever you like it, attached to the very edge of the part where all the rooms are. Then, on the hull, which is the bottom part, you draw HMS Titanic. And then on the back, you write Pool Annick, after Liverpool Titanic. But you just write that because it says Liverpool all the way around and Titanic all the way around. That is how you draw a Titanic picture.
And there you go. One famously tragic ship. Rest in peace, all who perished that night. And I hope that you could follow his instructions. He does draw quite a few of them, as to be said.
Coming up, it's near.
Coming up. And October's shop fest has finished, and I hope that you've all stocked up on all things crafty. So, what did you buy? And what do you plan to make? Looking forward to next year, I am writing as the Edinburgh Yarn Fest class list was opened for buying. So if there's sound effects for the ker-ching, like there is for Etsy, I reckon it'll be going faster than the telling or you being served right now. There's quite a few that have been sold out, and I'm waiting to see what my mum wants to do before I put mine down. And I was looking at the Gudrun Johnson Shetland Hap class. I'm not sure if my mum wants to do that one. The Edinburgh Yarn Fest is happening on the 17th to the 19th of March 2016. The 17th is just for classes, and the Friday and the Saturday is for the marketplace as well. I am going to this. I just realised when I was writing it and doing the research that it was the Friday and not the Sunday. I'm saving my pennies, and I had a wee panic the other day as I signed up for the Inverness Half Marathon on the 13th of March, which I thought was the same weekend, but no, thankfully no, it's not. Louise Scully, who's Cagney to my Lacey, is organising the podcast area and meetups, and so I'm basically doing what I told. But there will be a few of us there, and we will talk more on this subject in a future weeks. Retreat, retreat! I would also like to announce that my retreat is going to be happening again next year. I'm in talks with Natural Retreats and asked for prices, and the dates are okay. Well, I'm checking for prices just now, and I've provisionally thought of last weekend in May again, as it was this year, which will be a little bit more expensive than last year, but not as more expensive as other retreats. And this is due to the fact that because we're going to have a few more people, I want to hire the conference chalet too, because if we have more people, not loads more, but it would be better to have this space in the chalet for going and having food in together and using it as a space, because it wasn't quite big enough, one chalet to congregate in, and the reading room really wasn't either suitable for that. So if you fancy coming up to the far north of Scotland and spending some time with me, then I'm going to open the thread up on Ravelry and you can note your interest. This, of course, is only interest, and I don't expect you to sign up until you know the prices, and I will get them to you as soon as possible. And this year was absolutely wonderful, and I really hope to improve on it next year. I have some ideas, but I can't promise puffins.
Tartantastic!
Tartantastic. Last week, the tartan I chose was the Lindsay tartan, and my close encounters of the Lindsay kind is described in the Mimi Me section, along with somebody bought one of the Lindsay bags, who is an actual Lindsay. This episode, I have chosen another tartan in the shop Farquharson. Farquharson, Branch. Farquharson of Allargue. Farquharson of Braemar. Farquharson of Finzane. Farquharson of Inverkild. Farquharson of Inverray. And Farquharson of Monaltree. Tartan, the Farquharson, which is green, black and blue thicker stripes with an orange and yellow thinner stripe. Motto, Fide et Fortitudine, which is Latin for with faith and fortitude. I force nae frein, I fear nae foe. And their slogan is Carna Cum, which is Gaelic for care nor remembrance. The clan began with Farquhar, who was son of Alexander Shaw, who lived at the beginning of the 15th century. His Aberdeenshire descendants called themselves Farquharson and were prominent members of Clan Chattan. Farquhar's son Donald married Isabel Stewart of Invercold, from whom the Farquharsons of Invercold stemmed, as well as a number of other branches in their name. The Farquharsons of Braemar, Invercold and Inverree supported the rising of 1715. Francis Farquharson and Montrelly commanded the 300 Farquharsons who were in the centre of the Jacobite commanded the 300 Farquharsons who were in the centre of the Jacobite front line at the Battle of Culloden in 1746, though the most notable Farquharson support of the 45 rebellion was a woman. Anne Farquharson of Invercold, 20 years old and known as Colonel Annie, or La Belle Rebelle, was the wife of the chief of Clan Mackintosh, who was away supporting the government. She raised and personally inspected a contingent of the clan to fight on the other side, and in February 1746 entertained Bronnie Prince Charlie and organised a blacksmith and four of her servants to oppose and divert an attack on her horse designed to capture him. It's quite appropriate just now because they're talking about the rising in 1715 on quite a few of the history podcasts, so you can find out a bit more about that there.
The Beaker section.
Section. Firstly, the sewing machine front. I had made some Wallace tartan project bags, and they're now in the shop. And I also cut up quite a few more materials for the other bags. And plus, I was gifted some Laura Ashley material, which will go into the middle of the bags very nicely. I had cut out a slouch bag to sell at the Christmas craft fair in the Lindsay tartan, and I've paired it with blue velvet. She wore blue velvet, and was always going swimmingly until I realised that I had cut the velvet upside down and the nap was going the wrong way. And then I pieced it together and realised that I had cut the bits out in the wrong order again. There's two bits to the front and two bits to the back, and if you have tartan on the right side of both of them, it doesn't touch the tartan on the other side and need paired up so the lines sit right. And also the seams are not so thick for the velvet, so you don't have two layers of velvet, but one of tartan and one of velvet. However, there you go. This bag is wonderful in cotton, it has to be said. Double-sided cotton, so it doesn't matter if you cut it, and it can be layers thick without bother. But that's not if you are Louise, that I can't get this right, even if I try, Louise. However, I thought, well, I can make it for me, show the teachers today, because I was in being helping hand this morning, with the school, and this is the bag I can make if you want it in a specific tartan, then cool. And I really like this style of handbag because it's big enough to hold an A4 book and it can be slung over the shoulder for ease of use when taking two bairns, two dogs and messages in from the car and out and about. I've been cross-stitching in reality again, but very little of the white of the puffin has taken ages because it has to be done in the daylight. In the knitting news, it's kind of monotonous again, and I picked up again the Ashton Lane shawl by Amanda B. Collins, and I've got two or three more repeats of the cobblestones to go. And I've now made, well, I don't know how many, of the Cork and East gnomes. Very, very cute. And I've stuck on their eyes as well. I've got googly eyes for them. And glued the hats and the jumpers in place on the corks. So, I've actually sacrificed three books. A Jeremy Clarkson book and Call of White Fang and some crime fiction, which I'll have to check when I'm cutting out, doesn't have. So she was murdered gorily along the side. But I do intend to spray them gold and drip them with glitter that will hide all these words. Yeah, I didn't think about that before I cut it up, did I? This is in preparation for the Christmas fair. I'm making little Christmas trees on skewers. It's what makes sense when you see a picture, honest it will. In the library corner, I've finished this afternoon A Dance with Dragons, Dreams of Dust, Game of Thrones book 6, which is by George R.R. Martin. And I have, just behind the computer, Dances with Dragons, After the Feast, George R.R. Martin, which is book 7, and that is then going to be me up to date with the programme and all the books that are available. And then I will be a desperate fan wanting to know what happens next. Oh, theories. Yes.
Shoppy section.
Thank you very much for your purchases the past week. I very much appreciate it. The shop is stocked and there's currently some McLean and Farquharson tartan project bags, a Lindsay, two Wallaces, Robertson, Ancient Macmillan, and for you Outlander fans, some ancient and weathered Fraser bags. There is still two Suffolk Sheep tea cosies, and I need to make some more Highland Coos for Marsha Schmarta, who wants a tote bag. If you feel you want to contribute to my continued running of the podcast, but get stuff back as well, please go visit the www.etsy.com/shop/CaithnessCraft. I sound a little bit desperate there, don't I? Please! Oh, I'll be eating beans if you don't buy stuff. No, seriously. If you want a tartan project back, I'm your kitty.
Blah, 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 blah. Blah,
blah, blah, blah, blah, blah. Blah, 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 Sachin. Thank you very much for listening. I very much appreciate you taking the time to download and then listen to me splaff on. My email is kathinscraftcollective@gmail.com. I am on Ravelry as Louise Hunt. Etsy, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, Facebook, Kathinscraft, and you can access the Flickr photos from LouiseG2010 or via the Podbean site as www.kathinscraftcollective.podbean.com, and the photos are down the right hand side. The intro and the outro are Gain or the Sea. So thank you for listening.